Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview I did with musician, singer, entertainer, charmer, Tom Renaud. In this show, Tom will talk about how he discovered that he was a musician, which is, I have to say, a pretty atypical story. He'll talk about the way his career in music developed and how it has turned into something which he can do for fun. Also, I'm going to play a couple of cuts from his CD called In the Bag. So stay tuned. Here come the show. About being the person you really are. And in my show, it is my intention to point out that although we're not usually aware of it, so many of us are not being all that we really are. So many of us seem to be living out some version of ourselves, some small version of ourselves in many cases, and being in denial for interests, curiosities, spontaneous ways of behaving, which somehow in our childhood we came to see as ugly, dangerous, threatening, embarrassing, something that made us want to hide something about ourselves. And so many of us come into adulthood in denial for significant aspects of ourselves. As a therapist, I see this in the office over and over again. Families of origin, religious institutions, cultural institutions, schools, peers, friends, all these important authorities in a child's life have an opportunity to either encourage or discourage, either applaud or deride. And unfortunately, way too often, for all kinds of diverse reasons, these authorities deride. They don't applaud. They discourage. They don't encourage. And so many of us grow up without access to those things which are the most important to us. In this show, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, and I do that because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. The interview I'm playing today with Tom Renaud is really interesting because Tom is so clearly a musician, heart and soul a musician, and yet he didn't know it for a very long time in his life, and he discovered it in the most unusual, haphazard, atypical, odd way. I don't know another person who discovered their passion, their reason for being, in quite the way Tom discovered his. And I'm not going to tell you because I'm going to let him tell you. As I said in the run-up, I'm also playing a couple of cuts from his CD in the bag, and this will give you an idea of what a wonderful musician he is. You'll just hear him singing, you won't hear him playing, but he will talk about his playing in the show. I just realized as I'm putting this show together that the two songs that I chose to play out of all the songs that are on his CD are songs I've seen him do a number of times, songs that are my favorites of the ones he does. But in addition to being my favorites, it seems to me that they demonstrate the two polar opposites of what Tom is, or at least what he projects. The first song is When Joanna Loved Me, and I think that this speaks to the romantic Tom. And at the end of the show, I'm playing a song called What Are You Afraid Of?, which I believe speaks to the rogue in Tom. So we're going to start out with my playing When Joanna Loves Me, sung by Tom Renaud, and then go right into the interview. So here now is Tom singing When Joanna Loved Me.
When Joanna loved me, every town was Paris. Every day was Sunday. Every month was May. When Joanna loved me, every sound was music. Music made of laughter. Laughter that was bright and gay. When Joanna loved me, maybe came December, but even in December I'll remember her touch, her smile for a little while. Loves me once again, it's Paris. Paris on a Sunday, month is May. Thank you. when Joanna left me. Maybe came December. Even in December I'll remember her touch, her smile, and for a little while she loves me. Once again it's Paris, Paris on a Sunday. And the mother's back.
Okay, I'm here with Tom Renault in his adorable apartment, which he shares with the beautiful Judy Renault. And I'm explaining to Tom that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. I know, I'm fairly confident that the art to which you have given your life is the art of music. Would we say that that's accurate?
Yes, that's pretty much accurate.
Yeah. Uh-huh, okay. So, and primarily as a singer or as a player, as a...
Primarily, now pretty much a singer, but I still accompany myself on the keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
And I still play the saxophone.
Oh, yeah.
So, most of it is donated now. I'm pretty much retired in the retirement. Once in a while, we do a job that are...
So you're giving your life to music now,
yes.
Not so much your living, right?
Right.
Okay, so I only ask one question.
Yes.
And it is, do you remember the very first time music called to you, seemed like something you wanted to do, singing, songs, any of that?
Probably not until I was about 30 years old.
You're kidding.
I had dabbled with it in the service. Me and another guy won a Far Eastern conference test, what do you call it, singing competition. And it was fun, but I didn't think about doing it forever at that time.
Okay, so when you did the competition, had you sung before? I mean, what made you think you could?
Well, I've always been a bathtub singer, you know, just a shower and what have you. I never done any actual singing until about 30 years old.
Well, what happened?
I was married, I had a baby, and not much money, and I found a saxophone in a garage sale, and I learned to play enough to get down to the bar and sit in with the guy.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
You taught yourself the saxophone?
And the piano.
And the piano?
Yes.
This is how you thought to make a living by learning the saxophone?
Well, it kind of morphed. I'm sitting in with these guys, and I started singing, and the playing got better, and so they started paying me. The bar started paying me. And I was off and running. I said, God, this is more fun than my day job.
Well, what was your day job?
I was with the phone company.
So it was just a regular gig. It wasn't anything that you particularly loved or cared about or wanted to do?
No, it was just a gig, yeah. I mean, just to make a living, and it was a good company to work for. And
right. So all your early life, you think you're just going to be another regular person who's going to have a regular job and maybe have benefits or something.
Exactly.
And then, in order to make a little extra cash, you teach yourself to play? I can't get over this. So, not everybody could teach themselves the saxophone and the piano.
Yes, I seem to have a lot of natural ability in that way.
Do you know where that comes from?
I really don't.
'Cause it is kind of unusual.
It is, and nobody else in the family did.
No, no music. Did you? Was there music around? I mean, did they play the radio?
We had a piano.
You did have a piano.
My dad never played it until he was about 80 years old and sat down one day and just floored us all. Played a cross-handed piano that is long gone style.
So did you assume that he had learned the piano as a young man, he just didn't play it?
Yes. And my dad was kind of strange and remote from us. It was a strange, kind of dysfunctional home.
You know? Yeah, but it sounds like you had that in your genes somehow. You didn't necessarily know it.
Yeah, apparently, because I'd never heard him play it before that, and I said, my God, if he's done that when he was young, and to sit down now and do it and make it sound good, I said, there had to be some inherent thing that he has.
Yeah.
So that might have got passed on. And
so you never talked to him about it? You didn't? No.
No, he never
copped to, he just had the piano in the house?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yes.
And I know a guitar player who's, after he insisted on learning the guitar, he discovered that his father had a guitar under the bed and had always wanted to play but didn't.
Yeah.
So it's some... So, okay, so...
My sister got some piano lessons on this piano, and I think we were encouraged maybe to take a lesson too, but we really were struggling financially.
Yeah,
my dad
right.
worked and lost the house once and got it back, so he worked nights to keep a living and therefore slept most of the day, so we didn't have a lot of family life with him. So the music was not pushed at all.
No, it was a luxury.
Yeah,
that
so
really,
none of us got it.
Well, you got it.
And we didn't care.
Right.
So here I am now, 30 years old, and I have a baby, and I said, God, this is a lot of fun. So I'm down there learning how to play in the neighborhood bar. And back, I'm from Detroit, and back in that time, we're looking at around 1960, 61, too, in that area.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of good music going on in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So I really wasn't up to speed on what it was, but I just progressed along. I kept getting better connections and jobs.
So now, we're talking jazz here now.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, the old standards.
Right,
we just
yeah.
played out of the old fake books, basically.
Did you read?
I taught myself to read out of the fake books.
Chords.
Chords and the line.
Chords and the and the melody line.
Yeah, in fact, I hired in my first piano job because I knew three songs, and then had to hustle home because I put the job on the end of the week.
You had to learn some more songs.
I had to learn some more songs. So it was kind of goofy, but.
Well, it's kind of unusual. It's not common, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So, they had the fake books in the, so I still can't actually grasp it. You get a saxophone.
Yeah.
And you start blowing on it and pushing buttons? I mean, really,
yeah.
that's...
Yeah. Okay, let's go back in school.
Mm-hmm.
They had some kind of they tried to have a band thing, but it never really developed. But they had some instruments, and I did actually hold one. For a couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
I had it in my possession, but it never went anywhere. I had an ear for it. That came
mm-hmm.
in that period.
So but you knew that you already had some sense of where the fingers went and how to blow it and what it's supposed to sound like.
Yeah, but that was 20 years later that I picked it up.
Right, but that's why you chose the saxophone, because you'd
probably,
already had it?
Yeah, and I liked what I heard on the saxophone anyway. And I found it in a garage sale.
Meant to be. Right. If you had found a flute or a guitar, we would be talking about that, right?
So it's just progressed up the line.
Okay, so I'm so fascinated by this. So you find this thing, you have a familiarity with it. It's not strange. You pretty much know how to hold it.
Right.
You may know a little bit about fingering. You know what it's supposed to sound like.
Yeah.
You take it home and just start blowing on it and playing it?
Yeah.
So then when you go to the bar, you're playing by ear?
I can hear the song. As long as I can hear the song.
You figure out how to find it on the instrument.
Yes.
Yeah, you know this is not common, right?
It's not as uncommon as you think, though. There's a lot of guys, I knew a lot of guys that had every bit as much and more feel for it than I did.
Really?
Yeah, there was I belonged to two locals eventually.
Yeah, well let's get there eventually. So you start out, and they have the fake books, and you take one home and oh my God, I don't know how you even begin to learn what any of these chords are or what any of these notes are. Oh well, you can hear it in your head, so you play it, And you hear it, and you see what it is on the page?
Yes, yeah. And the chords have always still been a problem for me, because I never
learned it.
Yeah, I never really learned it properly. So I still have trouble faking the chords. So I still use, and Judy and I have developed a little card system so we could play our keyboards and look over the keyboards and still make contact with the audience. So we put them on like 5x8 cards. We have little books.
It's a cheat sheet.
Yeah, it's a cheat sheet. And they're this high, though.
Right.
Rather than this high.
Right. So he's saying like 5 inches high.
Yeah, I can show you one.
No, it's okay. I got it.
But
what's on it?
The words and the chords, period.
I see. Well, you don't need anything else, right? Because you're going to sing the melody.
Right.
Right. So for the songs that you're going to do, the words and the chords are there, and should you need them, they're there.
And I almost always need them when I'm playing the piano.
I see.
Yeah, I struggle. When I've worked at it any length of time,
Some of them won't be in your fingers.
Yeah, there's patterns that are pretty standard in most songwriting. There's some combinations they call one, like in Nashville they call 1-2-5-6.
Right.
And that's if you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. So and as you say, a lot of songs, especially a lot of popular songs, have the same pattern.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Right.
And so if you're playing a lot, that stuff...
That comes to you.
It comes to you, right. Yeah, okay, good. Yeah. So, fine. So you go to the bar, you're playing around, you've taught yourself to play. So at some point you get... Oh, well, did you have a piano? Because you said...
I didn't have a piano at that time, no. No.
So,
So I was pretty much a saxophone player and a singer.
Yeah.
And that progressed into pretty good paying jobs on the weekend in weddings and country clubs.
Part of this group, or by...
Well, I moved on from the bar.
So you were just... So were you freelance? I mean, so people would hire you as part of their group to play at the...
Guys came in and say, hey, I got a group here, and
right,
would
and
you
I
like to work with
group.
Me? And it right. just went along.
Right. So what happened was you started to know the players in town.
Yeah.
And they heard you play, and they heard you sing, and they said... So then they started to hire you.
Correct.
So at some point, did you quit the...
No.
You never quit your day gig?
I stayed for 32 years with the phone company.
God.
Got the pension.
Pension. Good boy.
And was 53 years old and said, adios amigos.
No kidding.
I got hospitalization, the pension. I said, I'll see you in my dreams. I'm heading for Florida.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I came down here in 88. Full-time. I'd been coming down for the winters for about 6 weeks, and
that was your vacation.
Yes, and plus.
Yeah.
They were getting a little
tired of you. Let's get rid of this guy.
So we came to a mutual agreement.
Yes, right. Well, that was amazing of you. So you were working full-time at the same time as you were playing gigs.
Right.
And you were being a responsible man. And
I was, but yeah. I did get divorced, and I was divorced when I came down here.
Okay, so you get divorced, now you're unencumbered in every possible way.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so you come down here in 88, wow, and where were you? I mean, where?
Actually, I came down right here to, there was a guy that I worked in a phone company with. We had a band in a phone company, too.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived here in a trailer park up here. And I had had an investment house once in Newport Richey, and it just was dead.
Mm.
There's nothing going on.
Right.
So I come down here to see Harry one day, and I said, man, there's music all over here on the island. I mean,
That's
it was
right.
all over the place.
Right. It was.
So I start, there was a guy that rented me an apartment right in back of the seafood shack over here for $100 a week. So every year I was coming down in the prime season, I had this place $100 a week, not $400 or $500 a month. I want that money cash every Monday.
Right. Right.
So So there I was, and then I'd call the company and say, well, I need one more week. I had 5 weeks vacation. Well, you can't just do that. And I said, well, you know, if I take it off, you have to pay me. I said, just give it to me, and you don't have to pay me. And that went on for a few years, and they said, you know, we've got a deal for you.
Right, and it was to everybody's advantage.
Yes.
Yes. So you come down here, mm-hmm. and you already know a lot of players in town. You're already connected, right?
Yeah, right.
So you start then making your living and your life with music.
Yes. Yeah, I went right to work down here. As a matter of fact, before I got down here, I was working pretty good. And mm-hmm. Was getting to where I didn't want to turn these jobs down. So. But we had, I really liked freelancing, and the island got, it was wide open. And it was really a lot of fun around 88, 89.
Yeah, it's changed.
It was fun. And then I hooked up with the jazz club somewhere in that period. And
Sarasota Jazz Club.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I found a gang down there, quite different than what we were doing here.
Oh, in what way?
Well, it's pretty much old Dixieland stuff is going on out here and I got to Sarasota and found a little smoother jazz.
Yeah.
And
that is really your style anyway,
Fred,
as far as I can
Fred Williams was kind of piloting the jam sessions and stuff, and he liked me a lot and tried to get me to be a singer with this, one of these theaters here, and I said, I'm really not a singer, Fred, but he actually had me go over to an audition. My heart wasn't in it, and it showed. That was funny, but he was a great guy.
Well, that's the theater singing show stuff is different.
Yeah. I said, I'm a barroom singer.
No, you're a jazz singer. I mean, it's very clear that you're, what you hear, you know, what's sounding in your head, you know, I mean,
right.
And coming out of your mouth is not what they're doing in theater. Right.
No, it isn't. It's very, I really phrase.
I know you do.
Up and back.
Yeah, right. And theater stuff is rigid.
That don't understand it.
That's right. And and so, but theater stuff is very rigid. You know, this is how the guy wrote it. This is a quarter note. You sing a quarter note. Don't be confusing me with backing it up. You know, or any of that. Right.
Right.
Right. And so, I mean, I know that's not what you do.
No.
Right.
And probably can't. I'm not disciplined enough to do it.
You know, that is one way to talk about it. I'm not sure it's the truth. I mean, what you do is so quintessentially you.
Yes.
You know.
It is.
It's and why you would want to try and rein that in, I can't imagine.
I never wanted to.
No. Yeah, so I don't think it's about discipline.
And the beauty was I had a pension.
Mm-hmm.
I had hospitalization.
Right.
So I didn't need to. Just was to supplement me.
Yeah.
And I said, I really don't have to do things I don't care to do.
Thank you. Thank you. Another rarity in this universe. Okay, so you find Sarasota. You find the jazz club. You begin to play down there with... do you join a band, or is it the same kind of freelance stuff?
Pretty much freelance stuff, yeah. There was some good players around that we all did. I didn't like being trapped into a place, although I hooked up with Lenny Wilson for several years, and Hank McDermott. I worked with Hank, but we didn't work as much as Lenny. Lenny and I worked in the Colony for 3 nights a week and the Hunt Club for 2.
Ooh.
So... That was probably a peak. I was doing 5 nights, and I wasn't really... I said, man, this is a lot of work.
It's very funny.
But it gets old to me when it's that much
work.
Yeah,
it's work.
Yeah.
Then it's work.
Yeah,
it's not dinner.
Then it's work.
Right, and for you, this has always been fun. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And luckily for you, you didn't ever have to make a living doing it. I mean, you know, you made money doing it, but you weren't required, you didn't need it, right?
And that really is the essence of where I've been at. I realized that. I said, you know, these guys are taking these crummy jobs for $50 and $75. And I said,
and nobody's listening.
I said, I'm not trapped into that. I said, this ain't fun, I'm gone.
Yeah. You didn't take another steady gig, or you...
I was really coming off those when I met Judy.
Uh-huh.
That was in 98. And we met at the Buccaneer.
So now that was a jazz jam, so you were just sitting in. This was not a gig.
Right.
Right? And yeah. Judy was just sitting in.
Yes.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And she was looking for a big band, and I tried to hook her up with several of the big bands. I knew the guys, but it was very hard. Well, you know,
yeah.
getting a girl singer job is almost...
Oh, no.
And never make any money.
No, and they don't like you either.
No, that's right.
You know.
So we wound up, and Joel called me from...
Wait a minute, who is this you're trying to get a gig for?
Judy.
No, I didn't realize that. Okay, so you met her, and she was looking for this gig, and
yeah.
you were trying to help her.
Yes.
I see, and you helped her in a different way.
I helped her into my apartment.
Yes, right.
So, as a matter of fact, I mean, she became homeless. Where she was living, the people moved, and I didn't realize. I said, well, okay. I said, we're better than friends.
Yes, sir.
So come on aboard, and I'm trying to help her get going. And Joe called me from Monroe's upstairs, and he thought I was still with Lenny. I said, well, I'm not with Lenny. I have a new partner. And we invented ourselves right then.
Yes.
I said, I'll call you right back. I said, this is a good paying job, two nights a week.
Mm-hmm. It's a great room.
$100 a piece. And I said, those are scary to get.
Yeah.
So I said, you need to play piano by Friday. He had one. And I said, but if I play the saxophone and you do this, and we invented the group right there, it's like Monday.
Oh, my God.
And
did she play at the time?
Very little. So Friday was... I thought a disaster. I thought he'd never have us back on Saturday, but he did, and we stayed a long time. In fact, he got mad because we had some prior engagements that we had to fill in. He didn't like us taking off.
So you got her a gig after all?
Yes, I did.
A good one, actually. A long-running gig.
Yeah,
you got her, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And then we did some other things. We did the steakhouse. Out there on Longboat, where it's now a Maury's.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did that. But I bought another investment place down in Punta Gorda that I was going to bulldoze, and I thought maybe I walked in there. I had bought this place without going in it because it was cheap on the water. And come to find out this old mobile home on there was beautiful inside. I thought I was going to bulldoze it. So we moved there. And guess what happened? I sold my condo up here, moved there, and the hurricane took us out.
Yeah, right. Bulldozed it.
We did bulldoze it.
Yes, yeah. Right. Were you all right?
We lived in North Carolina then for 8 years.
Why?
Her son was up there.
And
we couldn't get anything done. And we were homeless. So the guy found me... that I had sold my condo to, and he said, you can use it till Thanksgiving, which was godsend. This was in August, and you
right.
did not find a place to live.
Oh, no, because everything got destroyed.
Yeah. So we decided to buy a place up in North Carolina near her son.
Mm-hmm.
And we went up there and played the vineyards and
mm-hmm.
a couple of places in Charlotte. And but... most of the time it was dead. And this is another thing. They just didn't understand what we did up in North Carolina.
Yeah, right.
Now, the guys in Charlotte were good, and that worked pretty good. But we did pretty good with the vineyards, because people would sit down with a bottle of wine and we're outside. They were cool jobs.
Yeah, they would listen.
Yes. And they were very good paying.
Mm-hmm.
But we really missed it here.
Yeah.
So
when did you come back?
Almost 5 years ago now, I guess. 2011, I think we bought this place. Mm-hmm. It was a mess. We've redone the whole place.
It's real cute now.
And we're pretty happy with it. It's a little small. It is what it is. I don't need a lot.
I hear that. So how did you link up with Eddie?
You know, Ettman, Carol Ettman.
Oh, yeah.
Was coming up to visit.
North Carolina.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Her and Henry would come up. And she kept talking about Eddie Tobin. And I said, man, he sounds like a hoot. So when we came back, I drive by the Legion, and he's playing this Sunday thing, this dance. And I said, God, I said, I used to run that jam for a while, way back, way before her. And I said, let's go over there. And I grabbed a soprano and went over there on a Sunday, and we got up, and it was an awful. I kicked the tip jar off the stage. And he didn't even know my name yet. He stopped me and said, boy, you come in with a splash, don't you? I was so embarrassed. But we hooked up with him. We play some gigs with him, and we hang out with him. But it's mutual. Mm-hmm. And he's a wonderful player.
He's an amazing player. He's an amazing player. I have interviewed Eddie, and I run that interview every once in a while.
I think I listened to it.
Did you?
Yeah.
So, okay, so now you have this sort of ideal life. I mean...
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's...
Then you can't
once in a while we take a job that's for money, but most of the time we're just...
Play for fun.
Yeah, but the funny part is... People are mad when we don't show up.
Because they expect.
So I said, we might as well get paid for that.
That's right. You mean in the gigs where you don't get paid?
Yes.
And they're expecting you.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, right.
You pay me a hay and the Maury's both.
Yeah, right. People said, well, where are they?
Well, we got this other thing going. This is really funny. But Walter Beam, he followed me way back. And so he started doing these dinners. And we were invited to a couple, and he said, well, I'm going to bring my piano down from Rhode Island. So you don't have to do that. I got four of these keyboards. And I said, we're not working anymore. I'll leave one there. Mm-hmm. And we'll come over, and we get done with dinner, we'll play a little bit. Well, let's start working out, coined the phrase, Wednesday at Wally's.
Oh, wow.
Well, the problem was, Eddie was working at Amore's. And we were singing with him, and the owner was going to give us, he actually did, he gave us $100 at Chit's
for
his place.
Right, you could eat or drink or whatever, right?
Yeah, right. So I said, well, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, covers my expenses for the night, plus a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So we could come here with somebody else and like working.
Yeah.
Well, I said, I'm not going to work Wednesdays. And so the crowd fell off. So then it comes back to me, can you move Wednesdays to some other night? So we haven't, but the...
you doing Wednesdays at Wally's, or are you doing
we are.
You're doing Wednesdays at Wally's, right.
And it's just a lot of fun. He invites people to dinner. He loves cooking.
Oh.
They're gourmet meals.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. There's just people are killing to go there.
Oh, it's lovely.
Yeah, it's just fun. And so Eddie now stops in on his way home. So it's just a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So then he wanted us to play, Howard wanted us to play this Saturday night, but actually we have something going on. And I'm a little afraid to do that because I need to bring a keyboard in to do it properly for me. I'm not that good on the piano anymore. I don't practice on a real piano. That's a different thing.
Yeah.
So now that Wally's got a new one, though, played it last night, and it's coming back. We might do that. That's a lot of work. I'm getting old. At 3 or 4 hours, like Sunday, I take my horn over and play, and there's nobody else around. All the horn players have gone up north, so I'm the only horn player.
Where on Sunday?
On the American Legion.
Oh.
In Bradenton.
Mm-hmm.
I play that horn for a 3-hour gig with him. And I said, man, I am beat when
I get
off of
there.
Yeah,
that's a lot of work.
It is.
That's a lot of work.
I can't believe it.
So it's an interesting kind of balancing act that you're trying to pull off here now, where to have as much fun as you can playing and not to get locked into something that's too much like work.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a real juggling act.
Yeah.
And
people don't understand.
Careful what you say. because you get committed to these things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And people don't understand.
No, they don't understand. Because so many players are so hungry to play, and they... So when you want to do it to fulfill your life, to add to your life, to bring fun to your life, I mean, people really don't understand that.
Right.
You know? But it does sound like you have worked it out pretty well.
It's getting a little scary right now. We're out there four nights a week pretty much, and I said, this is really tying me up. This is our only night off this week.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, our own choice.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to go.
No. But I'd get strangled if I don't go Friday night. And Saturday night, we're actually going to dinner with one of the people from the Legion has been asking us if the four of us would come. So Eddie finally said yes. So that's where we're going Saturday night, and I had to turn the gig down anyway because of that.
Wow.
So, which suited me because I didn't really want to
play the gig.
I love Howard, the owner of that place. But
are we talking about Amore's?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a nice piano, but I told him, I said, we'll try and do the next one for you. But neither one of us are accomplished on the real piano. If I brought a keyboard in and set it up top, it would probably work, but
you're playing in the lounge?
The lounge.
Yeah, because sometimes people play in the restaurant and they do bring keyboards.
Yes. Yeah, and I wouldn't want to do that. I like the lounge.
Yeah.
We actually got a thing going with Eddie where we do about 15, 20 minutes. It's a knockdown, drag-out show.
Right.
And it just kills them.
Yeah.
It is a starting, and I said, you know, I'm really amazed at how good it's starting to sound. And
wow.
And it's lively. We have a lot of fun at it.
Actually, I keep meaning to come down, but I haven't yet.
It's, you know, we wind up doing some Louis Prima stuff in Keeley.
Yeah,
she drops Keeley like a rock.
Mm-hmm.
Stone face. So it's fun.
Well, come on out to Amore's then for as long as they're going to do it on Wednesday night.
Friday.
On Friday nights, right, because Wednesdays, it's Wednesdays at Wally's, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so...
We're usually at the Euphemia on Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And that's getting where you can actually get a seat in there now.
Yeah.
Through the season, which is...
I know, I've been down there a couple of times. There's no place to, you have to stand.
Yeah, you've been in there.
I have.
Yeah. So you want to make sure you're standing next to somebody pleasant, because it's close. It's close.
Yes, it's true. It's true. Or come early.
Very early.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, you know, prohibitive, because you have to get there 5 o'clock.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. One of the guys, Don, he's pretty close to being totally blind, and he always has a companion driving him there. And I find him sitting on the couch there in the front. He said, I got here at 5:30, and I couldn't get a table.
Oh, my God!
Yeah. So that's the way it is in the season. It just...
Wow. That's amazing. But Eddie's terrific.
He is.
He's terrific, because I don't think it's like that every night.
No, it isn't. No.
No. I was in there one night when I thought it was a Tuesday night, but he was out of town.
Yeah.
And somebody was sitting in for him, and it wasn't like that.
No, and it's quite obvious. But he's very accommodating to anybody that can warble a tune out.
Oh, God, I know. Think they play.
Yes.
I know.
Yeah, he's very accommodating. So.
Well, he's also very accommodating to the audience. I mean, he'll play whatever they want.
Absolutely.
You know, and he plays to them. Yeah, he's a showman.
And sometimes he'll play without a break.
Yes, I know. I've seen it. I know. It's amazing. I don't know how he does it.
He's got a better prostate than I do.
He's younger than you are.
Yes, he is. I keep reminding him.
Yeah, right.
I could be your father.
Well, all right. I have one other question.
Yes.
And that is, you have given many, many years of your life to this work, to the work of music.
Yes.
So is there anything you would say about what that's like, or what that's been like for you?
Well, it's just been a very satisfying thing in my life, and there's some sad parts to it in that it's not great for a family man to be in this kind of life, and I'm sure I share most of the responsibility for that marriage failing.
Mm-hmm.
And but all in all, I wouldn't trade it.
No. That's a great place to stop. Thank you so much, Tom Renaud.
All right.
Okay. There were some sad parts, but I wouldn't trade it. When you listen to Tom, it is my hope, as always, that you're asking yourself, is this how you feel about your life? Are you saying that, okay, there may be some things that I would do differently or wish had happened differently, but boy, I would not trade my life. This is my life, the life I was born to have. Are you doing what you wanted to do in your life? Or are you doing things you wish you didn't have to do or didn't want to do? Are you behaving in ways that don't actually reflect you? If you can say, I love my life, I wouldn't trade it. I wake up every day glad to be me. Well, and I say, hooray for you. But if you're thinking, well, there were things I would have rather done with my life, or even there are ways that I act in my life which really don't reflect me. I am not my whole self all the time. I second-guess myself. I wait before I respond. Or I respond too quickly and then I'm sorry about it. If there are things about your life which you regret, wish were different, want to change, The Lynn Show is about saying it may not be too late. It may not be too late to recover the things which you are in denial for. Was there some activity that you daydreamed about, may even still daydream about? Maybe you thought it would be fun to play the violin, or to go back to school, or to have a baby. Maybe, as I said, there are ways that you interact with others which are actually sacrifices for you, ways in which you sell yourself out. Don't lobby for yourself. Don't applaud yourself. Well, again, it may not be too late to become more the person that you would have been if something had not interrupted you or discouraged you. And if you're curious about that, if you want to talk about that, if you have questions about that, and you'd like to talk to me about that, you can find me at my website, thelynnshow.com. That's T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. thelynnshow.com. And there's a button up there that you can click on, and it says email me, and you can email me any questions that you might have. I'll be glad to hear from you. You can even get me to come and speak to your group or organization. And you could get a copy of my book or listen to some of my old shows. So now, as promised, we're going to hear another song from Tom Renaud. This is the song that I believe is coming from the rogue part of Tom. Charming and none less roguish. So this is What Are You Afraid Of, sung by Tom Renaud.
Come a little closer, stay a little longer. Now the gag is gone, put Sinatra on. What are you afraid of? Make yourself at home now. You know you can't trust me. If I dim the light, since the fire's bright, what are you afraid of? Who's to know you let yourself go? A kiss or so stray, hi-ho, the merry old, blame it on the stereo all the way. Baby, take your shoes off. not going dancing. Light the fire on, kiss me like before, throw another pillow on the floor. Love, learn what love is made of. What are you afraid of? Closer, stay a little longer. Now the gang is gone, put Sinatra on. What are you afraid of? Make yourself at home now. You know you can trust me. If I dim the light, since the fire is bright, what are you afraid of? Soon oh, you let yourself go. A kiss or so astray. I hold the memory of living on the stereo. All the way, baby, take your shoes off. We're not going dancing. Kiss me like before, let the fire roar, throw another pillow on the floor. What love is made of, what are you afraid of? Now the gag is gone, put Sinatra on, do it one more time.
When you listen to Tom sing, you get the same sense that you get when you listen to Tom talk. And that is that this is a man who is very much himself. He's not trying to be something he's not. He's not pretending to be something he isn't. He's simply himself. And as he said, there can be a price for being yourself. There may be things that you have to give up, or bumps in the road, or people who don't want you to be who you are. But when you are the person you really are, those things don't make the difference. The difference in the way you feel about your life is that day in and day out, you're not trying to be something you're not. You're not at war with yourself. You are what therapists call congruent. You are in sync with yourself. Really, when you are the person that you really are, life is much, much easier and much, much more fun. So, as always, I hope you got something you could use from this show. An inspiration, maybe the idea that you might actually recover something that you had lost or gain more of yourself than you have had previously. Maybe you learned something that you didn't know, that now you do know. Maybe you heard something that you did know, but you'd forgotten. Maybe you simply enjoyed listening to a musician ply his trade. But whatever it is, I hope you got something that'll bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be, too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten